Members, please take your seats. Turn off or silence all cell phones or electronic devices. Children, Families, and Senior Subcommittee will now come to order. Jude Lean, please call roll and announce a quorum.
Chair Coster.
Here.
Representatives Basabi.
Here.
Bearfield.
Here.
Black.
Here.
Ferrero.
Here.
Gossett Seidman.
Here.
Harris.
Here.
Joseph.
Here.
Killebrew.
Yes, ma'am.
Lopez. Maney.
Here.
Michael.
Present.
Rayner is excused. Roach.
Present.
Robinson is excused. Tremont.
Here.
Williams.
Here.
And Woodson.
Here.
A quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Julene. Welcome, members. I'm really excited about this meeting. This is, you know, we're going to talk today on behavioral health, but we're going to talk about it in a little bit of a different context than we normally talk about it. We're going to talk about it in the workforce. We're going to talk about it with some new concepts that are brewing out there as it relates to our business community and our workforce. And for that reason, I'm really excited because I think that this is, in my mind, the next step to explore in the world of mental health and behavioral health. So we have a couple presentations today. And as always, there will be time for members' questions after the presentation. So just hold your questions, wave me down, and I'll make sure that we get all of our questions answered. Our first presentation is going to be by Dr. Julie Saravich. Dr. Saravich is Dean and Professor at the College of Behavioral and Community Sciences at the University of South Florida. In addition to her teaching and leadership duties at her college, she developed and teaches a mental health and wellness in the workplace course that is available to the community. Dr. Saravich, thank you so much for being with us today. You are recognized for your presentation.
Maney, thank you so much to committee members, subcommittee members. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm very excited to present on a number of mental health initiatives that we have going on in my college at the University of South Florida. First, let me introduce myself. Again, as Representative Kasha said, Julie Sarovich, I'm the Dean of the College of Behavioral Community Sciences. I am classically trained as a counselor. I have an undergraduate degree in psychology, master's degree in counseling psych, and then a PhD in child and family studies at the University of Georgia with an emphasis in marriage and family therapy. So I consider myself to be a marriage and family therapist. When I finished my degrees, I took my first academic appointment at Texas Tech University in Lubbock, and after 4 years was tapped by the Ohio State University to go and develop their PhD program and get it accredited at Ohio State. After doing that, no good deed goes unpunished, and I was asked to become chair of the Department of Human Development and Family Science. After 17 years at Ohio State, great years, but I'd made the best decision of my life to become dean of this college here at USF. There's a lot going on here at the college, but when I arrived, one of the things that was really important to me is having been someplace for so long and being in a new city, I needed to get to know this city really quickly. And so I became a member of Leadership Tampa. And so as a leadership program, I got to USF in 2012. I graduated in Leadership Tampa 2014. So I got really very quickly integrated. The chamber later asked me to become vice chair of the class of 18, and then I chaired the class of 19. And I tell you that because I spent 3 years going to businesses of all different sectors in the Tampa Bay area and listening to the concerns that they had and listening to the challenges that they had and the strengths and the weaknesses for all of them. And during that time, I heard a lot about absenteeism, tardiness, retention problems. And in my mind, when I walk in as a clinician, all I hear is mental health, behavioral health, and possible addiction issues. So when I got finished in 2019, I approached some of the business leaders. And I said, can I come and talk? I didn't say you have a problem. I said, can I come and talk to your leadership? Can I come talk to your HR people? And they said, Julie, you know, we really like you. And you are so grateful for everything that you've done for the chamber. But I hire people to do work. So I expect that when they walk up to the business, they leave their personal issues at the doorstep. They come in, they do their job. And then when they leave, they pick up their baggage and walk away. And I thought, oh, this is the fall of 2019. So there's nothing. So they said basically no. No. A couple months later, Emerge Tampa Bay contacted me and said, and Emerge Tampa Bay is the group of young professionals. They're eager. They want to be in the C-suite eventually. They're determined. They're intelligent. And they said to me, we understand from some of the people that you've talked to that you want to talk about mental health. And I said, yes, I do. Do you want to talk about it too? And they said, absolutely. In no time, they pulled together about 50 or 60 young professionals. And they listened, and I sat in the middle. I brought some faculty with me, and I sat in the middle of the room, and I heard things like, I wish my boss could hear this. I wish my business place could understand, because this is resonating with me. So there I was, we're rolling into a pandemic. I've got business leaders that I know are not interested in mental health, and we've got young professionals. The divide between them and mental health is so severe that it was stunning to me. During the pandemic, as we all know, mental health just crashed everywhere, not just in the States, but everywhere. During that time, though, what I paid attention to, what was very interesting to me, because again, I am an academic, was how much better we got at teaching online. If you remember your first Zoom call compared to your last Zoom call, things have changed drastically. And during that time, we also learned that people can learn and can learn substantially from an online platform. We saw programs developed that allowed this to happen. And so when we got done, let me make sure I go right. So when we got out of the pandemic, I approached the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay. Some of you know Clara Reynolds. And we sat down and we talked about, let's put something online that people can take to learn about mental health and wellness in the workplace. She was right on board. We took some of her staff, we took faculty. So we had people that were on the ground floor that were talking to people, about answering phones, doing therapy. And then we had researchers on my end. And we got together and we put together this. It's a 7-session. Roughly 13 hours. It's free. It's online, and it's self-paced. So when you start it, you stop it. When you start it again, you go right back to where you ended. You don't have to go finding where you stopped. It's right there. So one of the things that we started last October. And it took us 3 months to develop the curriculum. It took us another 3 months to get the experts to come on to actually do this. Now, let me say, I had no budget for this. And so we had to get people that would volunteer their time, and they did. Everyone we contacted said, I'm happy to do this. I want to speak on this. I want to be involved in this. 55 people in total. We wanted to launch it in May. We weren't ready yet because May is Mental Health Month, but we started marketing it. We did pre-enrollment for the month of May through the first week in June. By the time we were ready to launch, June 12th, we had 5,500 people pre-enrolled from 69 different countries. Someone from every state in the country, all branches of the armed forces, and 49 of Forbes' top 100 companies had somebody. Now, it could be the janitor. I don't know who they all were. But they still were represented in our pre-enrolled data. So it really showed us that this had the only marketing I did, we had something come out from the college, the university put out from the Alumni Association, and we had one other little article that was put out in something that the university also had put out there. So basically what it was word of mouth. Once it started to spread. Now, I'm going to take you through this program, and so you can get a sense of what is it that is involved in this online program. Like I said, it's 7 sessions. The very first session, because I had such resistance from business leaders, I knew we had to make the business case right out of the chute, and that's what we do. We talk here about what does it actually cost businesses? What's the difference between return on investment and value on investment? And we show people how to use cost calculators where you can go online, and depending on your sector, and depending how big your business is, you can actually calculate probably what addictions and mental health separately will cost your business. The second session is on the climate, the culture of the business, and how important it is to have a culture that's open and that's receptive to people, you know, sitting and talking about the issues that they're facing. The third session is foundations. Now, as a clinician for 30 years now, you know, I understand the definitions and what people are talking about and things that are being said, but we realize that many people in the business community probably don't know a lot of the terminology. So we talk about terminology. We talk about how to reduce stigma. We talk about the history of behavioral health, just to give people an understanding of the basics. In session four, we talk about, you know, how do you identify if somebody's having a problem and an issue? And what are the most prevalent diagnoses? Now, let me say, this is not about diagnosis and treatment. You leave that to the professionals. It's about understanding what may be happening with somebody that's sitting next to you at the office. So we talk about what are the most common challenges that people face in the workplace. And let me say, you know, like, everyone thinks they know as a narcissist. Everyone says, I hear it all the time, oh, well, that person's just a narcissist. Now, I have not met any of your mothers-in-law, and there may be many challenging people in your life, but it's least likely that you would be interacting with a narcissist. You're most likely for other diagnosable conditions. So in session five, the approach, and this is the important thing, and this is really very simple. You don't have to be a technician. You don't have to be a therapist to know how to say to somebody, are you okay? You seem different. Something doesn't seem right these days. Do you want to talk? Do you want to have a cup of coffee, cup of tea? Do you want to talk? And then, and they can say no, and that's fine. We talk about how, why approach is important and how simple it is. Then we do a session on trauma and suicide. This is something, we have to talk about suicide. We can't not talk about it anymore. This is just becoming way too prevalent in our society. And trauma, often, there's hardly anybody who hasn't experienced some level of trauma. And sometimes it leads to more difficult circumstances for people, but we have to talk about it. And the final session is dedicated to wellness. Now, let me say that in here, we talk about EAPs, and this is really important because if we're going to talk to people and say, are you okay? And they say, no, I'm not okay. And that person needs to know, what do I do? How do I help? And so here we talk about the fact that EAPs for most companies have some kind of behavioral health initiative as a part of it. There are HR people that they can be taken to you know, understand what's going on. Now, let me say that we know EAP programs are drastically underutilized in businesses. And the reason is that they're fearful that you're going to take away their guns, their wife, their kids, their house. They're going to take everything away from them. And so they don't want to call. And in this session, we talk about what happens when you do call an EAP. Lots of businesses don't have one. And so we also talk about hotlines. Because if you're in a small rural area, mom and pop shop, there's always a hotline that you can direct people to try to get other services. Now, so this course, like I said, has been extremely popular. If I had to do a word cloud on the reactions, there would be three things that would come up primarily on that word cloud. One would be finally. The word finally came up. I can't tell you how often. Thank you and impactful. Those would be the major words that would that would appear. Now, we know, though, that this isn't enough. And in my college, we understand that this is just trying to reach out to raise awareness and sensitivity and compassion in the workforce. Again, it's not about diagnosis and treatment. It's just about raising awareness that the person who comes in and lays their head down at 20 minutes every morning when they come to work may not have been out drinking all night or playing video games all night. There may be something else going on in their home that prevents them from getting a good night rest. And so they take the first 20 minutes to do that. All we're saying is approach it with compassion versus some kind of accusations. So in the college, there are other things that, of course, we train programs. We have BSW, MSW, PhD in social work. We have three levels of applied behavioral analysis. We have a master's in clinical rehab and mental health counseling. We offer a master's in marriage and family therapy. Now, there's two things that I think are very unique that we do. And the first one is this BS in behavioral health care. Our undergrads can major in behavioral health care and be given mental health awareness, mental health training. We can prepare them to become technicians, basically. Now, the nice thing about that is that they don't have to go all the way to get the master's degree to figure out, yeah, this is for me. No, it's not for me. These are not high-paying jobs. I'm not going to kid anyone. It's not. They're very high burnout jobs. But it gives people an understanding that of where they can go from there. So you get a BS in behavioral health care. And let me say, this is the only one that we're aware of in the nation. There is no other behavioral health care major in the country. And 3 years ago, it was evaluated by an independent academician out of, I can't recall right now. But she basically, when she approached me beforehand and she said, do you really want to be doing this? Do you really want to be training undergrads to do some of this work? And I said, I tell you what, you take a look at that program and you come back and you tell me if I want to be doing this. Hands down, she said, this needs to be done everywhere. This needs to be offered far and wide because we can find ways of supporting the clinicians that we can't produce enough of. Now, when I first met with Clara Reynolds, and I'll wrap this up really soon. When I first met with Clara Reynolds, I said, would you be a part of this mental health in the workplace initiative? And she said, yes. She said, but Julie, let me say that I have 30 open clinical positions that I can't fill. And so jokingly, she said to me, well, can't you produce them fast enough? And she knows that given the restrictions that I can't. But she said, this is what I would like you to do. Would you be willing to go back and recruit, and I will pay your undergraduates? We will train them. She gives them like 30 to 40 hours of training so that we can push them into positions in the organization that they can answer calls, triage. We can train them to do that. And I said to her, I said, well, you know, she had to guarantee me the training because I was concerned about that. I said, well, what about my criminology students? She's like, they're perfect. Our sexual assault unit would love to have criminology students in there. And again, the nice thing is without even having a degree, we know that we have a real problem. And in our college, we're willing to take the risks and we're willing to take the responsibility to train people to do the work that needs to be done so desperately. And again, I think this is something that's very creative. I think it's different. And 6 months later, I went to her and I said, how's it going? How are my criminology students doing? You know, how am I? And she was like, it's beautiful. She's like, this is exactly what we need. So I want to thank the committee for all the work that you have done in the area of mental health. I think this is the word, like I said, the word finally always kind of jumps out. But I know that you've been here for a long time working on these areas. I'm very grateful to you for everything, your leadership that you've provided in this space. And just know that my college is here to help you in any way possible, be a source of information or source of support in any way possible. Thank you.
Thank you, Dean, so much for being here. And before I open it up to questions, I just want to say how helpful you have been to me in my journey of learning about mental health and learning what we're doing well and where we can improve. And you've just been fantastic in that way. And the university has been amazing in helping me piece together lots of different things. And so I'm just so grateful for you being here. And one of the things that you mentioned, the business case, I feel so strongly about the business case, which is why I invited you and the chamber here today, because it's easy for members of this committee to feel strongly about mental health and behavioral health because we know it's the right thing to do and it's the right thing to focus on for humanity. But we also are stewards of our taxpayers' dollars, and we're creating programs to support these folks, and we have to understand the business case. We have to understand that there is a benefit to the bottom line here, not just for our business community, but for the state as well. And so I just love that we're highlighting that. I love that we're talking about that. And I love the creativity in solving community problems, which is exactly what you just finished on. So thank you so much for your presentation. And members, I'll open it up to questions. Representative Tremont, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Doctor. I'll be brief. First, OH.
Well, yes, I owe.
All right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
But I know who pays my paycheck.
Yes, ma'am. So just a quick question in regards to education of mental health. Is there anything that your institution does with our high schoolers, middle schoolers, anything to catch them young? To begin preparation of that type of that's just a different world, where people, and it's in in many cases, out of sight, out of mind. It's not that people don't really know about it or don't care. It's just they don't know because they don't interact with that on a regular basis. But this is becoming more and more prevalent as our population expands, as, you know, the depression hits and all these things that contribute to that. The education of our younger people, not waiting until they get to the collegiate level in young adulthood, it's catching them early now. So it's normal for them. It's part of life, and they have that better interaction. Can you speak to that?
You're recognized.
So you're referring to educating them in the high school level around this. Yeah. I am not involved in that. I think it's wonderful. I do know that there is some, and I just met a woman last week at an initiative that will be talked about next that is doing just that in a high school. I can't remember exactly where, but I thought it was fabulous because if they understand, here's the thing, most of the majors in my college don't get to me until their junior year. Because we don't talk about mental health and they don't understand, you know, what these professions are. So by the time they get to me, except for social work pretty much people know. So I would love for more involvement on the high school level for people to learn more. Mental health first aid, if nothing else, could be taught. Yes.
No follow-up, but I didn't say thank you for acknowledging me. So
no worries. You're recognized for a follow-up.
No follow-up. Just thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. Representative Gossett Seidman, you're recognized for a question.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you, Professor, for the interesting and very topical presentation. My oldest son just graduated he's an MD in psychiatry. My daughter's a PA. But my middle kid, and I bring this up for a reason, said just this last week, having seen someone in, following up on Chase's question too, someone in high school say these really bizarre statements regarding mental health. And my 28-year-old son say, well, I'm really glad he's not in my generation. And I said, wait a minute, what do you mean? Well, he's an alpha generation. And so I actually went back and reviewed these levels of generation that have been X, Y, millennial. My question is, based upon that, are the younger people in our population having trouble communicating from one generation to another, which could be 5 years or 10 years, which I consider a generation like 22 years, 25. So where does that fit in with all of this training?
You're recognized.
Thank you. Thank you for the question. So let me say, are you talking about somebody who's like in eighth grade or something like that? Is that kind of the...
It's a high schooler, I believe, but the exact age wasn't designated, but he identified him as an alpha or a Gen Z.
Yeah, I have not heard of that. I do know that the younger generation, the generation that's working in my office, that I'm around all the time, I have two boys, the twins that are 24, and when they had their friends over at my house, because this is the place to be, you know, we made it the fun place, and they would talk all about mental health. That was an easy thing for them. And so for the I don't know the generation coming after them, but I think that's an anomaly. I do. I think that the younger the generations are just, they're embracing this and they're accepting it, and you know which is easing the stigma. If we can just ease the stigma, people will reach out for treatment and for intervention.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Dr. Sovich, for your presentation. Would you please clarify for me who is this class available to besides the USF students? Is it available to other students or anybody else who would like to take it? Because we know we have a crisis, and we know we don't have enough manpower to address the crisis as you're trying to find a solution. Is it available, or is there a plan as well to make something available to the small businesses where employees would be able to take such a class? So I have two questions into one.
Thank you. You're recognized to answer both of them.
So thank you. It is available. It's available right now to anyone. Like I said, I have people that pre-registered from 69 different countries that registered to take the course. So anyone can take it. It's online. It is free. So, and if nothing else, I invite you to go on and listen to session one. You know, it's 2 hours. You know, one of the difficulties, it is long. But as you saw, the topics that we had to cover to really make the case in the business community, we felt that we needed to cover all of that material. But the University of South Florida, as we speak, and we just had a meeting on it yesterday, is taking it down to about an hour and a half. And they're going to, as when you onboard as a faculty or staff member at the University of South Florida, you will have to take this course. And so, no, it's open to the general public anywhere.
Can you go back to the slide that had the QR code? If you scan that QR code, it'll take you to the course.
Correct.
So, members, if you want to share that in your communities or in your districts, I would encourage you to do so. Thank you. Do you have a follow-up?
Just a follow-up.
Yeah, you're recognized.
And that was going to be my second question, Madam Chair. What are you doing to make it available to the state of Florida? Like, everybody would have access to it. It's good that we are going to do this, but we have so many small businesses and people who can benefit from it. So is there a campaign to make it known throughout the state? Or
are you asking about, like, a disseminating, like, a marketing campaign? Because it's, okay, you're recognized.
So like I said, we had no budget to do this. Zero budget. We did it anyway. People volunteered because we knew we had to do it. So the advertising, the marketing that we have done has been through my college and through the university, trying to get it out to the business communities. And we do believe, like I said, 49 of Forbes top 100 companies had at least one person enroll in it. So we know it's getting out there, but we don't know, you know, moving it forward any more than that is, again, something that we can do internally, but that's about it. And I am speaking to every group that will put me in front of them. So your mother's knitting group, happy to talk with them. You know, the QR code, and you also have the website listed on there. But yes, I would do just about anything that's free that I could get the word out about this course.
Thank you. Representative Burfield, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for joining us. It's good to see you once again. I had the pleasure of joining you when you had the anniversary for the school at the university. In speaking with you, I know one of the things that you had shared, and you kind of touched on it a little bit today, was the fact that the pipeline is really an issue. And so I guess my question to you is, as you look at that challenge, you said, traditionally, it's going to be somebody who's a junior who arrives in your program. Would you say it is a education where there aren't the programs available, a cultural or another component, and are they anything we can be addressing to help bring those individuals into that pipeline so that you can do what you're doing in a more efficient manner to address the growing need?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. We only accept about 20% of the students in the master's level prepared, and that's your typical clinician. We only can accept about 20% in each of those disciplines. And the issue is that the accrediting bodies, so like the social work accrediting body or the mental health counseling, AAMFT for the marriage and family therapist, they set a ratio of students to faculty. And so if we have five faculty and they allow, you know, 20 to 1, we can only ever have 80 in our program. So that is the bigger issue. And I went back and I asked the faculty, when you get beyond that 20%, are these qualified individuals? Are these people that we would otherwise accept? And yes, we would. We would probably go at least to 40, if not higher. They end up going somewhere. Of course, they want to come to us, but it's not just USF. Any clinical training program has those constraints upon them.
Follow up, please.
Yeah, you're recognized. I mean, we could do a whole nother entire meeting on this specific topic, but yes, you're recognized for a follow up.
Thank you. You commented that USF was willing to take the risk. What were the risks that you had to take, and how have you either addressed those risks or mitigated them? And I'm actually going somewhere with this question.
You're recognized.
Thank you. So when Clara and I sat down and talked about this, I was concerned. They're taking undergraduate students that could be of any year, There was no restriction. And then putting them into the Crisis Center of Tampa Bay, which is a very high profile, a lot of moving pieces, and they weren't trained on basic behavioral health, many of them. The risks were mitigated by the comprehensive training program that she puts them through before they even touch a telephone. And then the constant, you know, a constant appraisal of their performance to see whether that's a good fit for them or if they want to move on. And again, these are paid because she can't fill the other positions. They're paying them. And so I was a little worried that just anybody would, you know, walk in and say, yeah, I need a job. Well, that's not what I want for my profession. It's not what I want for my community. But that's how we mitigated it.
Follow up.
You're recognized.
So then the concern is the individual and the level of training that they were going to be receiving. So my final question ties into, then why isn't anybody else doing this? I mean, I understand you may not be able to address the number of individuals who can ultimately get into a program, a master's program. But with some of these other opportunities to create that pipeline where you've got to start it with getting your undergraduate before you can get the master's degree. Why haven't we seen some of the other universities jump into this area?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. I don't know that they're not. I know in the behavioral health care major, we've seen nowhere else in the country. But I don't know if other centers like the Crisis Center are working with universities the way Clara and I are working together to try to shore up her business of providing, you know, the care that she needs to our community. That may be happening. I'm not aware of it. And so it was a little, at first, you know, a little jarring. It was like, gee, you know, but we trust each other. We work together so well that I knew, and I know the kind of training that they provide their regular staff. And if they put my students in and my students survive it, they're going to be aces. So I have to say that it could be happening in that other places, but I'm not aware. And at the undergraduate level, really just the BSW, the social work degree at the undergraduate level, that is the most prevalent. So if someone wants to become a clinician, they're probably going to gravitate to that, to there in their local university. We just decided that there's more, you know, that we could be doing. And, you know, at our height, we had about 300 students in there. We probably have about 200 now. So it's not, it can be done. And again, we're just, to the best of our knowledge and to the best of the consultants that we've worked on, we're the only one doing it.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, members, just a quick roadmap. We've got 10 minutes and I've got four people that have questions. So just bear that in mind. Representative Michael, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Professor. This is amazing, this presentation. Very quickly, first of all, Rep. Burfield already asked and you answered one of the questions I had. But the other question I was wondering is, I heard you say that you were able to offer this course to all four branches of our military. And I have in my district, I serve a military base. My husband's a veteran, so this is dear for me. And I'm wondering, have you been able to offer this or reach out to the veteran community?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. What I hope I said, you know, when you're talking so fast, and is that we had representation from all four branches of the military. We've been trying to get to move in that direction. You know, again, I'll talk to anybody, and we do have people that are willing to send out letters. People are busy, you know, and it's the follow-up that we need. But I, again, yes, I think this is very important. I will say that I did talk to the Department of the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, and they are very interested in making this a course that law enforcement would have to take, and they would get, you know, they get credit for that work. And so we do have, I mean, there is an option for them, because to get that credit, they have to, like, know that they really took the course. So there is another version of it that's for a badge or a certificate for the program. The badge or certificate requires a university to actually do things, and that costs money, and so there is a charge for that. But the Department of Florida Department of Law Enforcement was willing to do that. So we're engaged in that conversation. We're engaged in conversations with the Hillsborough County School District as well.
Awesome. Representative Joseph, you are Ranking Member Joseph, you.
Thank you. I'm actually not ranking member. That's Rep. Robinson. I'm just here for a decoration. I'm sitting in her seat. So I want to acknowledge our one. So my question for you is, it's kind of in lines with some of the stuff, but a free suggestion that we can help you get the word out. Do you have any, like, social media, anything that you can share with us, and then we can help distribute to our all the people that we want to get the word out, and we can do that for you for free?
You're recognized.
I have social media stuff all over the place, and I'm happy to give it to anybody. Yes. The answer is yes, and that very first slide is a card that I have that outlines everything that, and so yes.
Great.
Thank you.
If you want to get that to us, to me, somehow, we will disseminate it to the committee. Thank you. Vice Chair Maney, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Chairman. Chairwoman. I guess it's a compound question, as I would say in the law. But thank you to USF, because they've done a whole lot in the space of Baker Act and Marchman Act, and this is a wonderful initiative. Is there such a thing as a credential for a mental health assistant? Like physical therapy assistant. Is there such a credential in the people who do your bachelor's thing? Is there a pathway to get a credential like that that would help them with employment and being used?
You're recognized.
Thank you for the question. And no, there is not. Now, the BSW, but no, there is not. And this is something that I know our faculty are very interested in creating, somehow a professional organization, professionalizing it in that way. But at this juncture, when you're the only one doing it, it makes it a little more challenging. And let me also say, the Baker Reporting Act Center is in my college, and we have done a lot with the Marchman Act. Yes, thank you for recognizing that.
All right, members, I think that concludes questions. Thank you so much again for being here and for always being so willing to be a resource for me and for our committee and for everything that you and the university do in this space. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for your work.
Absolutely.
Appreciate it.
Thank you. All right, members, next we're going to hear from Dr. Robert Ronska, the Senior Vice President at the Florida Chamber Health Council. He's going to discuss the Chamber's Health Council's initiatives related to behavioral health in the workplace. And I just want to preface before you get started, members, that this is this project within the chamber is really in its infancy, in its research phase. I know that our presenter is going to cover all of that, but I just I'm so excited to have our business community involved in this discussion, and just can't wait to hear your presentation.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and Vice Chair, and the distinguished committee members. So it's such a pleasure and honor to be here to talk about our first ever business-led statewide mental health initiative. And I am Bob Ronska. I'm the Senior Vice President for the Florida Chamber Health Council. So a little bit of background of the chamber. So the Florida Chamber, as we all know, has been over 100 years. It's over a century. And the main commitment of the Florida Chamber is for the business community and the community that they serve. And so for us, I'll get into a little bit later, why is the business community involved? But as you know, the Florida Chamber, led by Mark Wilson, CEO, tackles hard things. And mental wellness is one of those hard things to tackle. And so to be able to tackle that, we created the Florida Chamber Leadership Cabinet. And our goal is to make Florida the most safest, most sustainable, and healthiest state in our country. So to do that, we came up with three pillars. So the three pillars are the Safety Council, the Health Council, and Sustainability Council. And I'm in charge of the Health Council. And so one of the first things that we saw to improve health across Florida is mental health. And so why is the business community or the Florida Chamber getting involved? Well, I'll give you a little bit more background, is that we looked at the number of people that are coming here by 2030. We have a net 2.8 million people additionally, and we have 1.23 million new jobs expected. And so we did some research, and the research is part of our the blueprint to secure Florida's future. For 2030, if we want to become the 10th largest economy in the world, I'm not talking nation, I'm talking in the world. We're currently 16th. We came up, the study showed that we have to do 39 goals to be able to achieve this. And one of those goals is that we have to be in the top five with wellness. And we all know that you can't have a flourishing economy if you don't have a flourishing workforce. So this is why the business community and the chamber is getting involved. So a little bit about me. So I think it's important to understand the background. So I spent 28 years in the nuclear Navy. I was a captain of the USS Texas, the fast attack submarine. And so we did multiple missions, clandestine missions, vital to national security. I also carried the nuclear codes, also known as the football, for the 43rd president. I was a commodore in charge of 10 nuclear fast attack submarines. And so why is a guy that has this background leading mental health? And so I did get my doctorate degree at Rollins College in Business. I understand the business community is here to serve the community. That's the first and foremost importance of the business community. I also worked in healthcare for 5 years and saw the need for mental health care and whole person care. But another big piece of this is I want to share my why. This was my dad when he was 3 years old. You could see him hugging that dog. And I did some research. This was 1944 when he was 3 years old. And about 5 days after this picture was taken, his mother died giving childbirth to his sister. And on that day, 5 days later, after this picture was taken, he lost his mother. He lost his sister who died during childbirth as well. And he lost his father because he couldn't take care of him anymore because he grew up on a farm. And he was placed in an orphanage and he lost this dog. So for 8 years, he was put in an orphanage. So when he had a family of his own, like me, he used to hug me like that dog. And so when I went away to the Navy, my mother, who had signs of schizophrenia when I was growing up, but it came to full fruition when I went away to college. So my father lost me. He no longer had his wife. And he started living back to that trauma that he had as a child being taken away from his parents. And so he couldn't take it anymore. And that one day, I never forget, I got the tap on the shoulder when I was in the Navy, is that my father died by suicide. And so this is my why, because he didn't have the care. He didn't have the resources. My mother didn't have the resources to get help with mental schizophrenia as well. So this is my why of really why I think this is so important. And you can imagine there's so many other mothers or fathers or children that are also subjected to this anxiety and this trauma. So I don't want to do this just to do this. You saw my background. I want to do this to make sure that we're going to make a difference. So I did research. And going back and research, you can really find what worked and didn't work. And so I want to take you back in history of the greatest generation. The picture here depicted is Admiral Rickover, the father of the nuclear Navy. He was one of the greatest leaders, I'm sure you've heard, of the greatest generation. And so what he did, he took the technology of the nuclear bomb, and he says, I can forever change national security. I want to put this technology in a nuclear reactor and put it on submarines so that we can improve national security. I don't know if you know this, but 1 out of 5 submarines in World War II were diesel submarines. They were lost at sea because of the vulnerability of not having the technology of nuclear power. And so in 5 years, he took this technology, built a nuclear reactor, and he put it on a submarine, and the Nautilus was launched to sea. And what was even more amazing, we've gone for over 75 years without a nuclear reactor accident. We've had 20-year-old kids operating these highly enriched nuclear reactors. The same bullets or fuel. I'm sure you've seen the documentary Chernobyl, Three Mile Island, Fukushima. The same fuel that was in those reactors are in the same reactors of these nuclear reactors, of the naval nuclear reactors. So who else was part of this greatest generation? In fact, it's been approximately 60 years since the famous speech from Martin Luther King, "I Have a Dream." And another person I'd like to mention is John F. Kennedy. John F. Kennedy in 1962 says, "I challenge this nation to put a man on the moon by the end of the decade." What did we do? We put a man on the moon in 1969. He also had a dream. He said, "Listen, we need to change the mental health services in our country. The mental state hospitals are inhumane. We need to close these hospitals and shift this care over to community-based care." And the last act before he was assassinated, 21 days, on October 31st, he signed his last legislation, was the National Community Mental Health Act. What that was to close the insane asylums, the inhumane insane asylums, and then shift that over to community-based care. But we got half of it right. So 21 days later, he was assassinated. And here's a picture of him 4 days prior to being assassinated. He went to the Chamber of Commerce in Tampa, one of his last stops. He then went to the business community to solicit help on knowing the importance of the business community. So why is the business community care? So as the dean mentioned, this is no longer the cost of doing business. This is business. Our generation is no longer transactional. One of the main reasons of the great resignation was you need to feel valued. Well, not having a proper caring type of culture in the business community, such as I care about you, I care about your mental well-being, I care about your family, is directly affecting the bottom line retention and all these things that are up here. One of the great discussions one of the great research things that just recently came across is how it's getting worse is that Tampa Thrives did a study. And in that study, in last year, there was 10% of the workforce that experienced 3 missed days, work days per month. That was last year. What's most alarming is that this year, that increased to 14% of the workforce. And the number of missed days went from 3 to 4 in 1 year. 1 year. And I'm sure that you're seeing in the news on how this is becoming a crisis. And if we don't address this immediately, it's going to get out of control. So I just want to give you some other statistics of where we're at in Florida. So this is from NAMI, that 1 out of 5 U.S. adults experience mental illness. 1 out of 20 experience serious mental conditions. And we did a survey response at our last leadership conference that 85% knows of somebody that has mental health crisis. I'm sure that number is higher than that. I know at least 4 or 5 people in the last month that have experienced traumatic, significant mental health crises in their family. So this does not only affect the adult population, as we all know. This affects children. Our greatest asset of our next generation. It's the leading cause of suicide for young adults. I'm not going to go through the statistics, but this is where we talked about schools and how this is affecting schools and how our younger generations, especially our high school, are really being affected by this. So how are we doing in Florida? Well, Florida, we are ranked 49th in the U.S. according to Mental Health America with access to mental health care. If you look at the number of facilities, as we talked about the workforce, we're ranked 49th. Luckily, we're the Sunshine State. We're not as bad as the 49th, but we have so much room to improve. And so the other thing that I want to mention is that the percentage of Florida survey population with depression, anxiety, this is a Florida pulse that the chamber did, or a survey the chamber did. 59% of the workforce that were surveyed said that they felt feeling of nervous, anxious, or on edge. And 51% of them said, "I'm not being able to stop or control worrying." So this is a snapshot of our Florida society today. So the other thing I'd like to mention, the opioid epidemic has spilled over into the workplace. So I really congratulate and really applaud your efforts on the opioid reduction. It's really important. And one of the things we came across is that you're 3.5% likely to have a substance use disorder if you have mental anxiety or mental disorder, which means the root cause is not using opioids, which it is.
But the real root cause is the underlying mental anxiety that you're experiencing to force you to get to that. And this is spilling over to our workforce. You can see the opioid prescription is going down, but the overdoses are going up. But you can see lately it's starting to trend down. But my call to you is that we need to address the underlying condition, which is the mental wellness of our population. So what is the current mental health care model? This is something we're looking at with this study that we're going to go forward that I'm going to talk about. So if you look at it, it's fragmented. So the body and mind are not cared for at the same place. So for example, if you go in and break your leg, right, you go to the emergency room. You go to the emergency room for mental health crisis, you're not getting the same care. And it's different. And same thing if you go to your primary care physician. They'll tell you exactly about your cholesterol, your blood pressure. They'll know everything about that. But when you ask them about where you can go to get anxiety and your concern and struggling with mental wellness, we're not where we need to be. And so let's look at the crisis standpoint. So if you're looking at crisis, what happens? So you go to the emergency room, especially those that are on the street. And I've been told it's like a revolving door, right? 3 days later, you're getting discharged and you're back coming in 3 days later. So the other thing is they're going to jail. And so does the evidence support that? So yes. So in Orange County, the leading provider of mental health services in Orange County is the Orange County Jail. And look at Miami-Dade. Miami-Dade County Jail contains nearly half as many beds serving inmates with mental illness as all state and civil forensic mental health treatment facilities combined. So the immediate concern is, how do we deal with these individuals that are in needed care? So I couldn't agree more. But what is our long-term plan to preventively cause the care that we need? So one thing we're looking at with this study is the ideal mental health care system. It's an integrated primary care provider. That if you go to your primary care provider, you get a one-stop shop. You have mental health care and your physical care all underneath one roof. And we'll say it 1,000 times, you can't have care or health care without mental health. So this is why we're looking at this. So how are we gonna do this? What are we gonna do differently? So we, last week, and Dean, she was one of our incredible speakers, we kicked off our inaugural mental health summit last week. And so the purpose of this mental health summit is to advertise that this is the first time it's a business-led statewide movement designed to unite business leaders and mental health experts in revolutionizing mental health landscape across Florida. And so why is this different? How is this different? I'll give you three things. There is not another state chamber in our country that is doing this. We are leveraging our business connections with across Florida to get on board and unite with all of us to make sure that we can move this needle. The second thing, we're using data. We're doing research to guide what we're going to do. This data is using pre-existing data, but it's quantitative and qualitative. We're using all pre-existing data, but we're also using qualitative data. We're hearing people, what can be done to be able to really move the needle in Florida. And thirdly, we're bringing all the key stakeholders together and we're coming up and sharing best practices. What Dean talked about earlier today about high schools, right? One of the things that brought to this summit was they have this great program where they're going into high schools, and before they graduate, they're going to get behavior health certified as a technician, right? So they're going into the high schools to get the next workforce, but also they're giving them the tools necessary so they can help out high school students. And when they graduate, they're becoming technicians. And this was identified by bringing people together. And the OCPS, one of the scholars there in the audience, he says, who's that person that said that? I called her out in the audience. I need to meet her. So this is what we're doing by bringing the great minds together and sharing best practices across Florida. So we have just begun. As I said, this was last week. So this is our overall plan. So our overall plan is to improve awareness, just like Dean Sarovich talked about. We need to get rid of the stigma, and that is one of our main goals. We're developing a structure. How do you get best practices across Florida to start sharing their best practices so that we can have a governance schedule to know what we're going to bring to you all so that we can either change policy or share these best practices through a network system. And lastly, measurement. You can't change anything, as we talked about, unless you measure. And so one of the great authors that I had a chance to wonderfully read is, his name is Henry Cloud. Henry Cloud wrote the book Necessary Innings. But when I saw him speak, he says, listen, he says, if you really want to change something, you have to build a lattice structure. So what is happening, he uses this analogy, is that you can plant rose bushes in West Palm, Miami, Tampa, and that's what's happening. But if you really want to see something grow beautifully, how are you connecting the dots across Florida to be able to really change this going forward? So that is what we're doing. And the research questions qualitatively is, where are the good things that are happening across the sector in the state? What are the things that need improvement across sectors in the state? And what are we leveraging state and federal policy to accelerate data-driven, scalable solutions in the Florida marketplace? Again, why this is so unique is that all these recommendations are feeding up through our chamber, and it's going to our policy people at the chamber to be able to unbiasedly come to you all and say, this is what we think is best, and this is where unbiasedly, with data-driven metrics, this is what we think is best for Florida. So what is next? This summit is not going to just end here. So lastly, our intention is and May 9th and 10th, we have our leadership conference where Michael Phelps is going to speak on mental wellness. He's the keynote speaker. This is where we're going to unveil the research that we did or started here last week. And we're also going to discuss our structure, our strategic structure going forward at this conference. But if you look, 2023, we're assessing. 2024, we're uniting. And 2025, we're going to continue this on. And we're going to, with courageous patience, we're going to start moving this. So with questions, every one of you in this committee, I really applaud your leadership. I really applaud what you've done for Florida. And with courageous patience, I couldn't be more confident that we could really work together to be able to make Florida the safest, healthiest, and most sustainable state in our country. So thank you for this time.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for being here and for your passion. I know we've spoken before, and you exude passion for this subject matter in a way that is infectious and I know is going to help move the needle in a positive direction. The business community, in my opinion, has always been such a strong partner for the state of Florida in helping come up with creative and innovative solutions to problems, and this is the next big problem. And I just applaud the chamber. I applaud you for really taking this on, and I'm just so excited to see what you bring to us at the end of the day. I'm going to kick us off with the first question, and then I'll open it up to members. Can you share with us the Navy Bob, where that came from? Just sure. Quickly. I can't help but be curious.
Sure. Thank you.
Organized.
President Bush had a nickname for everybody. If you worked with President Bush, 43. And I just started to work at the White House, and there was a volunteer to go make trails on a bike trail. And so he asked me, the personal aide asked me, would I like to go help, you know, as he was a big avid bike rider, would I like to help make trails with the president? And I said, absolutely. You know, I'm always willing to help. And so as we're driving back, I could hear the personally, I didn't have a relationship. I just started. And he asked him, who went to go help you? And there was probably four or five of us. And he says, well, John, Bill, and so forth. And I could hear him say, and Bob. And all of a sudden he says, who? Who? And he goes, you know, Navy Bob. And so from that day on, I was dubbed Navy Bob. So that's the history behind Navy Bob.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Thank you for your service as well. Members, any questions? Vice Chair Maney, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. Before I say anything else, I want to thank you for a great briefing. And more importantly to me, thank you for your service. I think this is a great initiative that you briefed. I would suggest, as you mentioned, the jails and prisons are major warehouses of people with mental illness. I would suggest, with all due respect, that you include somebody from the judiciary in your team to talk about that aspect of it. So it's more of a suggestion than a question.
Very good. Do you need an answer to anything?
Or? No, I do not need an answer. They'll either do it or not do it. But I'm willing to help.
If you have a comment, yeah. Please. Yeah.
So
you're recognized.
So thank you, sir. So we are bringing all key stakeholders together, which means we're not going to do this alone with the private, public, government, nonprofit. We are looking at bringing the judicial system in. There's so many great, you know, in Miami, we hear about the wonderful things that they're doing in Miami. So we'd love to take that rose and connect a structure, lattice structure, so that we can then share that with all the other things. So absolutely, with our structure, one of the key things is important that you get the right people on the bus, and the judicial system is definitely going to be part of that. So thank you for that recommendation.
Representative Tremont, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I believe Representative Maney kind of stole the thunder, because it's a great question. And that's kind of where I was going. I understand there's no silver bullet to dealing with this issue, because so many people struggle with mental illness for a variety of reasons, obviously. It's a medically induced kind. There's emotionally issues that lead to it. And that's where I was going was to the prison population, specifically targeting that issue. You mentioned certifications for our high school students. And I've had a number of conversations throughout the years with folks and chamber members, mostly at the local level. And I'm wondering what your thought process is on being able to address that population, because so many of them who are in there, most of them are mothers and they are fathers. And if we understand anything about the human nature, people want to feel loved, they want to feel valued, they want to have responsibility, and they want to have purpose. So oftentimes these folks get out of prison who are still mentally stable, you know, teetering a little bit. Then they get out, they go right back to their lifestyles. So how would it look like with some sort of prison to prosperity program to where they're having some serious investment from businesses, from corporations, from the chamber to, is the second opportunity for school. I know programs like that sort of exist right now, but I'm talking about really zeroing in so people are graduating out of prison, ready for the workforce. Can you speak to that? Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're recognized.
Thank you. A great question. And so I'll just give you some things across my journey of what I'm seeing. So I went to Citrus County. In Citrus County, we had a mental health symposium. And there, they're providing programs that someone is getting out of prison. They're giving them the tools necessary. How do they cope with society? To include, how do you go get help, mental health help, after you get out of prison? And so there was a United Way there coming together and so forth. And also, we have our Future Form work. And so we're working with the prisons and businesses to be able to give some of those people the needed jobs that they have right out of prison. And so we have initiatives. And again, we are forming the plan. But I think what we're doing initially is we are right on line with you. We need to really get into this population and help these people. And what we're doing is, one, we're sharing best practices. And then through the Future of Forum work with the business community, we're providing them the necessary opportunities that they should have. And so that would be one of my highest priorities coming from here, is to make sure that we move this up to the front burner so that we can address this.
You have a follow-up?
Just a brief follow-up. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'd love to be a part of a dialogue, and I know there's many folks here. I know Representative Lopez is very passionate about this, but I'd love to be a part of some sort of dialogue. And if there's anything that's needed from the legislative side to push that effort and encourage that effort, I'd love to keep a dialogue. Thank you so much for your service, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Representative Woodson, you're recognized for a question. You're recognized for two questions.
Thank you. Thank you, sir, for your service, and also thank you for the presentation. On slide 12, When we're looking at access to care in Florida, we rank 49 in the U.S. And based on your research, the chamber's research, could you speak to some of the barriers that you have found and your recommendations to address some of them? Thank you, Madam Chair.
You're recognized, and again, I am going to just remind the committee, I don't know that the chamber's not here today with recommendations. I think that we're here in terms of sort of the problem and the research that's happening. So certainly I think you could speak to the barriers that you're finding in the research, but I don't know that they have actual recommendations yet for
it. If you don't, it's okay, but at least I would like to hear some of the barriers.
Sure.
That's your first question.
Great. Thank you so much. Great question as well. So if you look at where this statistic came from, 49th out of 50, this is Mental Health America. So if you look at every single state, they rank each state with access to mental health care. And if you look at some of their metrics, it's the number of psychiatrists, therapists per popular capital and so forth. And so why this is so exciting is the research team that has we embarked with, they've been doing this for over a decade, not only in Florida, but in other states, four or five different states and federally. And so they're leveraging their expertise of doing this research to see what other states are doing. And so they're going to dig in to what Mental Health America is measuring this. And we are going to really find out if this is valid or this is something that, you know, we can improve on. But and we're going to rank of where we're going to go and triage, like what is necessary this year, what is necessary next year, and so forth. But this is a great indicator that we're looking at this because Mental Health America, totally separate institute, is saying that we're ranked 49th of 50th in whatever it is. If it's in the 40s, it's still not good, and we're looking at that. So we're validating this as we speak to make sure that we can provide the right survey questions or study to be able to move this needle forward. So I don't have a recommendation yet, but we do know that we're looking at this hard and we're going to validate this data and we're triaging what they are saying or finding to be able to most effectively help out Floridians. And again, I'll say this, that even though we're ranked 49th, this is such a wonderful state that we are around 20 with the well-being because we have outside, we have sunshine, we have wonderful people. And so you can imagine if we can move this and it's in fact 49th, and we can even move it up to 20 or 25, you know, initially in the first year. And what the great thing that Dean is doing and, you know, the other high school students and get access, I have no doubt. I wouldn't be on this journey if I wouldn't believe that this is something possible and really finish what John F. Kennedy has started, President Kennedy. So thank you for that.
You're recognized for a follow-up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second question, actually. On slide 17, we know mental health is a major issue. Doesn't know colors, doesn't know races, doesn't know anything. And I'm glad to see that you mentioned Miami in there because Miami is very diverse, actually. And mental health in the African-American community and the Hispanic community, you have to look at it on a different lens in the sense it's not spoken. Or it's seen, mental health is seen as a sign of weakness. So is there any plan to look at that as well in order to make sure that they have full access to what you're trying to do?
Absolutely.
You're fine. You're recognized. Oh. Go ahead.
So thank you, Chair. So absolutely. One of our main objectives in our research is look at diversity and inclusion and inequality, inequity. And so you are completely right. We need to look at these different cultures and figure out why is it that we can get the awareness out there. And so one of the things, like I said, we're looking at is the equity disparity of different races in our wonderful country or wonderful state. So absolutely, we're looking at that. And there is a disparity. We did recognize that. And we are developing a plan to be able to address that. And one of the things we're doing at the chamber as well, if you look at our gap map, one of the main reasons why people, not necessarily the culture of the stigma and social, but some of our beloved residents don't have transportation or food securities to be able to sleep well and have anxiety associated with that. And so through the Florida Chamber and GAPMAP, we know exactly what major communities or zip codes that are lacking with transportation to medical care. And so that's how we're partnering with the Chamber to be able to address these issues across Florida.
You have a follow-up?
Well, short, Madam Chair. Thank you very much for taking that into consideration. And I would even break it down with the Caribbean community from the African-American community, which is completely different. So I would like to have that conversation with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair.
You are welcome. Representative Lopez, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Thank you, Navy Bob, for your service. Love your nickname. So I just wanted to follow up on two things, if I may, Madam Chair. General Maney brought this up, obviously, as a concern, as did Representative Tremont. So I do a lot of work with mental health vis-a-vis those that are in prison. And I think part of the problem that we have is 65% of the inmates in our state prison have a diagnosis. We only fund the severely and persistently mentally ill. So the vast majority of our prisoners have come in with a mental illness. Sometimes it's been exacerbated by the traumatic experience of being in prison, and it is never addressed when they come out. So we get them jobs, we get them housing, we try to reunify them with their families, and they're never able to really succeed at any of those until their mental health and or substance use disorders are addressed. That said, I think that's one challenge that the legislature faces, because once we have this very captive audience, no pun intended, we don't do anything with them. And then we exit them into the community and hope that they will succeed. And unfortunately, for our businesses who take a good chance on these people, they're met with separate challenges. But if we look at businesses in general, and I happen to sit on the board of the Greater Miami Chamber of Commerce, and we have been studying this issue for a very long time, but I think part of the problem is that businesses in general don't have an understanding, and by this I mean the C-suite, often don't have an understanding of what's really going on with their employees. And I'm going to give you an example, and I hope that you will look at how you can further this in your work. So I am a certified life coach who decided to gift Leadership Miami. I said I'll gift the first five people in, participating in the program with a coaching session. Turned out 15 people wanted it out of 50, and I said, okay, I'll do all 15. I was amazed. These people on paper who all work for some of our really large businesses, they really look put together. In one session, I noted such despair, whether they didn't like their jobs, they didn't like their supervisor, their family lives were falling apart. And when I made my report to the chamber, people were shocked in the C-suite. What? I thought they were happy. And I really believe there's a disconnect between the C-suite and right down to the, you know, lower level employee and everything in between about what's really going on with people's lives. And I think that if there was more conversation in the business community around, listen, it's perfectly fine. We know everyone is suffering, including those of us in the C-suite, right? I mean, if we could start to have conversations like that in business, I think employees would be more apt to go to their supervisor and say, I need help. And then the employee assistance programs should be connected to some really wonderful community-based providers that say, look, if you need 6 weeks off because you need residential, let's do it. Because if businesses are actually making an investment in their employees, they need to understand that that investment should be protected by those that are crying out for help. But we've got a big challenge, and you know, Frank Walker and Carolyn Johnson are my dear friends, and I want to work with them as I always have. But this is one place where I think businesses can make a huge difference, not only in the justice-involved people, obviously, but in regular employees and regular management. The C-suite's suffering, too. They're just too afraid to tell anybody. So I want to commend your work for it and hope that you will do some digger-deeping, you know, sort of dip into, like, where the C-suite is, where the employees are, and maybe we need to host focus groups and conversations with business leaders and say, look, not only are you suffering, you better look beneath you, because they are too.
Thank you. Representative Joseph, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
First of all, I just wanted to acknowledge and thank you for sharing your why at the beginning of this. I have a good friend who's also a service member, and thank you for your service, who also lost his father by suicide. And I thank you for honoring his legacy with the work that you're doing. So I wanted to do that first. Second is, I wanted to kind of follow up on some of what Representative Woodson kind of talked about. Like when I look here, for example, and this is not me trying to put you on the spot, you know, there is no visible diversity. That being said, I hope, and I'm gently but firmly requesting that as you consider, as you move forward with your work, that you look for ways to incorporate individuals that are representative of the people of Florida who have all of these needs. So it's just a little gentle request. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Gossett-Simon, you're recognized for a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, sir, I just wondered, with many prison records being public record of note, how one figures out the numbers of inmates who need or required or obtain mental health. How is that figure determined? Thank you.
You're recognized.
I don't know, but I can get back to you with that. This was just some data that was provided, so I can get that information for you and get back to you.
Thank you, sir. Just a follow-up?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just wondering, based upon HIPAA still being the law in the prison system, it would be great to know. Thank you.
And I also didn't give you an opportunity to, the last couple weren't really questions, but were statements, and you're certainly welcome to address either of them if you have anything you want to add.
Thank you. So first, great question. So if you look at two of those speakers up there, one is Kim. She was a senior executive that she hid her mental illness. She was on the verge of taking her whole life. And, you know, the statistic is 1 in 5 people struggle at the C-suite, and we kind of hide it. And her story is pretty impactful. The second story is Adam, who used to be a senior executive at Kaiser Permanente. Same thing. He was on the road where he was not going to be around much longer. And one of the things we're doing is Vince, who is up there as well. He has a powerful story as well, where he's the CEO of Ajax. It's a payment company. I don't know if you know these statistics, but construction workers are 5 times more likely to die by suicide than any other industry. And the reason is because their sleep circadian rhythm's off, they hurt themselves on a job, they're stressed. And so he tried to take his own life as well. And so he is a big advocate. And when I asked him, I said, Vince, if we're going to start making a difference in Florida, what would you recommend? And I asked every single one of these people. He says, Bob, he says, we need to get a toolkit out to the CEOs, and we need to change the stigma. We need to get them a toolkit to say, it's okay if you're feeling stressed. It's okay if you're having experience of mental anxiety. Go see our EAP. You can trust me. We are not going to hold this against you. And so exactly what you said, one of the biggest stigmas are out there is the business community, especially with insurance companies as well. So that's one thing we're going to tackle. And so to answer your question, you're right. I don't know if you know Dr. Tice from Florida Blue. Dr. Tice has a big, big proponent of diversity and how we're going to solve this equity inequality throughout Florida. And so she couldn't come to this conference, but she is involved in this as well. But you're right. We need to include people of different backgrounds and so forth. So thank you for that comment.
You're recognized for a question.
So with the comment that I made, I wanted to elaborate. It's not just in terms of racial diversity. Although that's primarily the point I was trying to make, so let me not take it away. Because sometimes, in terms of any kind of healthcare, we're talking about mental healthcare or other healthcare, the social determinants of health, but also cultural competency matters. Beyond that, you know, you talked about the construction worker, and I didn't know that statistic until you just said it, but when we think about our rural community, for example, lots of vulnerabilities there. But because of the same overlapping issues with the social determinants of health, whether we're talking about access to transportation, et cetera, and I don't know if that's also included. So as you're expanding, you know, the perspectives and developing the solution, you know, one Black doctor is nice. I'd encourage more Hispanic as well. Not all Hispanic people are the same, but and I obviously don't need to tell you that, but I'm just saying, and somebody familiar with the rural needs, because they have even less access to healthcare than we do in some of our larger cities. So just putting all of that out there. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you have any further comment? I know you've addressed it, so I'm not expecting you to, but I also don't want to cut you off if you had some other thoughts.
No.
Okay. Seeing no further questions, I just want to, again, thank you so much for being here. Thank you to the Chamber for the initiatives. It's fantastic. Thank you to University of South Florida for being here as well and for all of your hard work. I, as all of the members of this committee know, this is something that I am incredibly passionate about, both from a personal perspective, but also as a business owner, that has been highlighted. The business case for mental health and mental wellness has been highlighted for me personally as an employer in the last 18 months of owning my law firm. And so I just am so excited to see the work that's going to come out of this and can't wait to see what you all bring to us. And also can't wait to see if any members have folks that take the course and what reactions they have. I would love for you to follow up with me if you hear of those success stories. I'm sure that the dean would also welcome that. So thank you all for being here so much. And thank you, members, as always, for your insightful thoughts and questions and participation. Thank you. So members, that concludes our agenda for today. I will say at our next meeting, we're going to start to hear a couple bills. So that's exciting. I look forward to seeing all of you then. And for today, Representative Tremont moves we rise. Without objection, meeting is adjourned.